Yeah, okay. Thanks. Okay, it's a pleasure to be here. I mean, after 2 years, and to discuss about with you about these results. So what I plan to do in this talk is to review a few results that you get in the last five, six years, and just to initiate discussions about that. Part of those results has been already described by the talk of Loic Vanel on slow propagation, so of a single tracks in two dimensions. And so I make a short introduction, if you want, to his talk, but just by explaining historically as we arrived to this point. Okay, so the people who participated different steps on this work, well, that's of course Santucci, Loic, and Philippe Scott, and myself in laboratory, and then there are several participants: Guerino from the University of French Polynesia, Garci Martin of the University of Pamplona, Scorretti from the École Centrale of Lyon, Politi, that is an old colleague of mine in Italy, and recently Stéphanie Deschanel and Gérard Biget of INSA of Lyon, that is an engineering school in Lyon. So the motivations, how we arrive to these motivations. When we started this activity, the main question that we asked, I mean, we decided to do some experiment, where may simple model the sky formation of cracks. What simple model I have in mind? At those times, for example, we are talking about percolation model or self-organized criticality and other things. And we asked a simple question in the sense that there were at those times a lot of numerical simulations, but nobody has really tried to see if this kind of model can be applied in to describe real physics in materials. And so the question that follows the first one is: the crack formation similar to a critical phenomenon? If yes, what are the experimental conditions when this can be appear? And another important point that, of course, can have many practical applications is the life of a sample submitted to a tensile stress predictable. And, okay, these questions are indeed related, and in this sense, if the question is that, for example, if the crack can be described as a critical phenomenon, the property of the critical phenomenon can allow you to describe, to predict the lifetime of the sample.
So
okay?
Critical phenomena just mean there are some scaling laws?
Yes, I mean, okay. Critical phenomena, I think, for example, as you will see, for example, divergency of some properties that you can measure, okay? Typically, the damage rate, for example, of the damage itself, and how many you can ask, I mean, from an experimental level, what kind of parameter can a good quantity that allows you to test this kind of things, okay? So, the outline of my talk is the following. So I will speak about the microcrack localization and statistical analysis, the experimental apparatus and comparison with percolation models. Then I will talk about the sample lifetime, then the activation models for crack formations and comparison with the experiment. Then I will mention the problems, and then I will spend some time in order to explain this simple model that we have used in order to justify what we have seen. There are some interesting inputs of this model, but okay, you will see that there are problems when you compare to real experiment. Okay, a consequence that I will not discuss because has been extensively discussed by Vanel in 2 weeks ago. So I will not speak about that, but I can answer questions, and Loic can answer questions too about problems related with that. And then I will give you some conclusions. Okay, so experimental setup. First of all, what do we measure? We use the different geometry, as you will see, And then, so we remember there are many different things in different situations. So the applied pressure and the sample strain, of course, and we have a system in order that the feedback loop allows us to impose either the stress or the strain. Actually, this is very important in order to compare with these percolation models and so on. Then acoustic emission from microcracks, microcracks localization, acoustic energy, and the X-ray tomography in order to see how the damage progresses inside the sample. Materials. We have studied this problem in several materials in order to compare the results on different situations. So chipboard wood panels and fiberglass and polyurethane foams. Okay, this is quite recent, and you will see that there are interesting properties of these materials. So, for those that are not familiar with polyurethane foams, are mainly polymers which has embedded inside a lot of gas, and so they are really foams, they are solid foams that actually begin to be used extensively in technological applications.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
The chipboard and the fiberglass have a lot of texture, right?
Yeah.
Intentional?
This is absolutely intentional. Thank you for a question. I forgot to say. Indeed, I mean, when we started this activity in order to compare with this model, the idea was to find materials that can mimic the network that people were studying those times. I mean, and so I mean to have something like a pre-structures inside the materials. Okay, that was the original idea. So was really intentional. So the geometry that we use, there are two geometries. One is driven by different. The cracks is driven by different pressure. Actually, the sample is confined between two chambers. And the control parameter is the difference of pressure between the two chambers. What you can measure is the strain of the sample in the center. Okay, and the sample is round, and then here you put piezo ceramic that allows you to measure the sound emissions on the sample. This originally has been done in order to have a system to break samples that. As not moving parts. I mean, indeed, in this configuration is quite interesting because the only moving part is the sample, which is deforming under pressure. And so if you want to study acoustic emission, your sensitivity can be very high because you have not a lot of emission as you have usually in a tensile machine, where you have a lot of moving parts that can be source of sounds. Okay. So this will be explicitly done in order to detect very precisely the sound emitted by the sample with a high sensitivity. So this is just to illustrate, this is very well known, just in pedagogical pictures, that of course you have quite different behavior, and then we will see that this is important. If you charge the system at imposed pressure or imposed strain, of course you see that the pressure versus strain is quite different in the two cases. Here you have the plastic effect, here the system breaks before that. And this is the case for fiberglass that accept this loading that, this is the part where the solid part is stretching, and then here when the fibers begin to be stretched, and this is the breaking point. Okay, so what do we say? First of all, let's see what happened on a very qualitative level about sound emissions. What we do, of course, let me take the example of the round sample that I've described. Here we have the piezo. So, of course, if you have sound emitted in some point, you can detect with the standard triangulation technique the point where the sound has been emitted, and also the acoustic energy emitted at each step. So this is an historical an history of a sample, and this is when the pressure is increasing. Here pressure is increasing linearly as a function of time, and I've divided the interval in five parts. And then you see that at the very beginning you have cracks that are appearing in a random way all over the sample, and then you have a sort of localizations, and at the end the crack localized around the region where the crack actually appear. And this is the sum of all the cracks, the events that has been detected during during the experiment. Another point that is important to stress, that here the sample, the deformation is very large. Therefore, the system is not breaking because of bending, but just because of stretching. Well, that is can be shown by.
So what was the deflection relative to the thickness?
Very, very large. I mean, the breaking point was much larger than the thickness. Therefore, you are in a situation where, yes, yeah.
If you just look at the stress state predicted by continuum mechanics, do you find that you would get failure along a ring?
I'll show you. This is actually a bad example. I have to change it. You see that there is a geometry, but indeed, what you see that is really dominated by disorder, the system, because this is another example where the symmetry is broken. Okay, and you have cracks in this direction. This is the final cracks. This is the micro cracks that has been localized. And then you see that indeed putting the two picture one over the other, on the top of the other, you see that the density of micro cracks is actually very large in the region that is broken. Okay. So this is wood. Okay. So here you see that on a qualitative level, you have that the percolation picture actually is not so bad, in the sense that you have cracks that appear randomly all over the sample, and then they localize along the path, and then they contribute to construct the final path of the system. So you are still on a very qualitative level, and then so you try to push the comparison on a more deep level, and then what you study is the acoustic energy emitted as a function of time. This is again looking at pressure increasing linearly as a function of time, and this is typically what happened. This is acoustic emissions. Okay, you see that it's strongly intermittent, and then is increasing close to the point where the final crack appear, and then is the cumulative energy. Which is the sum of all the events, and this is the dashed line that is much more continuous. Okay, so you see that you have a sort of divergence, a very strong increasing of crack acoustic emission towards the final cracks. So first of all, let's study some statistics of that. Okay, what you can study. There are two quantities. One is the distributions of the amplitude emitted during the process, or you can study also the time, the statistics of time between two events. Okay, and what you find that both are power law distributed. This is an example. This is the distribution of the amplitudes of the acoustic emissions, and this is the distribution of time between events. You see that you have power laws in the two cases, and so meaning that indeed the system is really going on without any kind of characteristic scales, both for amplitude and both for time. So this once again goes indeed in the direction of some way in a critical description, a description of a critical phenomenon in which you have no real scale that can be defined inside the system. And now we did more recently using polyurethane foams. We did an experiment using X-ray tomography in these solid foams. Okay, this is the example of the sample. This is a slide of the sample. This corresponds to 500 microns. So the size of the holes inside are around can vary from 500 microns roughly to 40 microns or even less. So let's see what happened when you apply the tensile stress of this sample. Then I will tell you exactly what the procedure is. Okay? So this will be a time evolution of the system. So this is the now it is evolving. Okay, it's been okay. So you can see it again if you want.
This is compressive loading?
No, it's tensile. This is tensile. Yeah, it's stretched. You see that it is thinner here, it's thinning there. And then, so you see that indeed the percolations pictures, well, still on a qualitative level is not so bad, in the sense that you have nucleations of cracks all over the system, and then there is a path that is going from one side to the other. So exactly, let me explain how the experiment has been done. Each image, this is just one plane of a three-dimensional image that I don't have here, but roughly speaking, what you need is around 90 seconds in order to construct an image, so you cannot continue to stretch the sample during the experiment. So what you do is the following: you charge, you begin to apply the stress to the sample, and then you have also, in parallel to that, you have piezo ceramic detector for sound. And so once you detect sound, you stop to stretch, okay? Then you release the stress on the system, you construct the image, and then once you have finished to construct the image, you begin to stress the sample again. Still, the point in which, has been stopped, but then you can measure the system, and then once each time you hear some sound that which is emitted by the sample, you stop and you see how the image has been modified. So to be more precise, for example, I'll show you the picture. This is the first picture that I've shown. This corresponds to this one. Nothing has been appear in this case. But now you see that there are some sound which is emitted, and indeed there are micro cracks that has been appeared has appeared on this hole. Okay, and this is the process is continuing till the end at this point where the system is broken. Okay. So this is just to show localization of the sample. This is not the round sample. Sorry, I forgot to say this is just a standard sample. This is actually very much smaller. And then you can see localizations. This is a sound that has been localized on the sample, corresponding to this crack and to this other crack. Okay, so this is very qualitative. Still, we have no quantitative comparison. So in order also to go into the direction, what kind of parameters I have to use in order to try a quantitative comparison with the percolations model and so on, we went back to the acoustic emissions that I've shown you before, because indeed we have seen that this corresponds in some way, the topography tells us that indeed this corresponds to some damage that appears inside the sample. And so what you can do is the following. You can consider the cumulative energy E, and you can plot as a function of a reduced parameter, which tau is the time of the breaking time, and so you can construct this reduced parameters tau minus T over tau. And then what you find that indeed, depending on the driving conditions, that is here for a sample in which the pressure is imposed, and sample where the strain is imposed, you have a strong difference. Because here indeed, when you impose the pressure, you find that you have a critical behavior with exponent that are not quite different from the two materials. For in certain cases, for foams, it can be similar. But in the case of imposed strain, you see that no criticality has been observed. Indeed, you see there is no power law close the critical point or the crack point.
So this is for the same material?
This is for same material, of course. Okay, so the conditions indeed change completely the behavior close to the of the sound emitted close to the critical point. Okay, let's call the crack point the critical point. So indeed, what we realized that in all of the system, in all of the model where this kind of critical behavior has been observed, was always done with imposed stress and not imposed strain. And then you realize that quite simple. I mean, you have a by hand explanation of that. Because indeed, think to a system that in which we have imposed for example, a network where you have imposed stress. If some bounds of the network break, the connections close to that bounds have to support a larger strength. Okay, so the possible probability of increasing producing avalanches is very high in this case. Okay, whereas in the case when you impose a strain, you see that the situation is completely different. Actually, the effect of breaking has a stabilizing effect. Okay. Yes.
So when you're considering percolation, you're saying percolation of the micro cracks.
Yeah.
But don't you think the presence of one microcrack would make it favorable for another microcrack to appear close by, and therefore it's not a purely independent process?
Yes, that is not purely independent. But if you had
It's
not completely independent, I agree, because once you have produced some cracks inside, then the probability of cracking the region that is close to that, okay, is certainly important. But still, you have to think that the network can have some disorder, and not necessarily, I mean, you can have such a kind of regular behavior. When you increase, you can have some other points that will break all over the system because of disorder, okay? This is the point that you can have. So the disorder, actually, in this kind of networks can play a very important role.
True, but it seems like the feedback is much stronger in the models you're talking about than in a purely percolative model where there's no feedback at all between where you have a bond or site and where you don't.
Sure, people have looked a lot at damage accumulation models where they put in the fact that breaking a bond forces energy to shift somewhere else. And it changes all the critical exponents. It changes the fractal dimensions and everything.
Yeah.
Everything else, because elastic interactions are long range.
Yeah.
So I guess you're just sort of using all those in some global way as percolation models for both the disorder and the long range interaction matter.
Yeah.
But there are predictions for various critical exponents for some of those damage accumulation.
Sure.
Models. Do any of them work?
These are close, for example, to those of directed percolations, indeed. Okay, but I mean, whatever it means. Because you see that, it may depend. But anyway, these are rather close. Okay, if this is the question. So let me summarize the experimental result till this point. Okay, experimental data show that a strong analogy between crack formation in composite materials and percolation models. This is on a qualitative level, when the system is driven and imposed pressure, a critical behavior is found near the critical pressure, or if you want, the critical time. These models do not seem to have a good predictability of the lifetime of the sample. Indeed, if you want to use this kind of behavior, of this kind of information to predict the lifetime of a sample, actually these are not very useful, because you see that even if you study this kind of behavior, this kind of power law appears around, let's say, 10% of the or 20% of the phylum time. So, I mean, can be useful, but indeed not too much. And What you, the other possibility is to study to the localization in a more quantitative way. But what I've shown to you that it's going back very rapidly to the year that, okay, for example, take here. What is appear, I mean, in a very easy way for the eyes, indeed it's very difficult to find methods to put number on that and to put quantitative values. And then indeed we try different techniques, but none of them indeed. So, indeed, we sign, for example, minimum spanning tree, localization, entropy, and other technique that can be very performant in several cases. But in this case, we didn't work so well. So the question is, now that I want to switch to the second part of my talk, that is, may lifetime be predicted? In the sense, in this kind of system, the point is, if you can find some technique using this criticality or other, in order to predict the lifetime of a sample to submit to a tensile stress.
All the experiments that you showed, they were monotonically loaded until...
Yeah, exactly. Okay. This is now a switching issue in the sense that what I want to do now, for example, I want to mainly to focus, for example, to a creep test in the sense in which you fixed the stress and then you study how the time evolution. So... We try to go back to all the work of Zhurkov in the 60s, that was the first to propose this kind of approach, and then Golubovich and Pomo in 93, I mean, wrote several models, two models about that. So we were inspired by these models, and the idea in this case is that the point is that that macroscopic failure material is produced by thermal activation of microcracks in the system. Specifically, what you want to say that is the sample lifetime is related to some exponential of a potential of an energy of the system divided by the temperature. The point is how W can be computed for a crack. And then Pomo and Golubovich independently use the Griffith criterion for the crack stability. So I don't want to go into the details of the theory, just give the results that they produced. And what they produce is two results, one in the case of 2D and then in the case of 3D. And you see that the dependence comes out to be very strong because you have exponential of P0 over P at power 2 and this P0 over P at power 4 for the three-dimensional case.
Sorry.
The P is the applied pressure to the sample. Okay.
What's P0?
P0 is defined in the case of the three-dimensional case. Okay, is defined as gamma is the surface energy. Y is the Young modulus. Kb is the Boltzmann constant, and T is temperature. You see that the dependence is really very fast because it goes exponential of power 4, and then indeed this kind of expression at those time was verified in 2D crystals. Now you will see that we have doubts about that, but okay, I'll just giving you historical pictures. And then what we thought is also that this can be also older in a cumulative way and find for a time pressure, for a time-dependent pressure. That is, if you apply, for example, a periodic loading to the system, a fatigue. And so if you believe to this expression, indeed this can be modified if the pressure is time-dependent in this way. you see that when the integral of this is equal to 1, in the case of constant pressure, you find again the previous expressions. So what we do? Sure.
So arbitrarily small pressure, still this will say that there.
Yeah, but I agree. But look the dependence. Okay. It means that you go immediately for a reasonable time to the age of university of the universe. I mean, so it goes very, very fast. Okay, so what we did is the following. Okay, I would expect already several criticisms from you, but I will go to the point, because of course there are a lot of problems in this. But still, I mean, as an experimentalist, I forget all of the possible criticism. I do the experiment, and then we will discuss. Okay? What I show here is two experiments. One is done at imposed pressure, the other at imposed strain. And then you see that you find again what I've seen before, the strong difference of behavior of the system when you apply the two different control parameters. You see here the pressure is imposed. To specify, this experiment is done in the round example that I've shown you before. Okay, it can be done either on fiberglasses or wood. I mean, the results are quite similar, as you will see. Okay, so what we do is we increase the pressure, we keep pressure constant, and then we look to the strain. Okay, you see that the strain increases till the crack point.
So we're having, so the left-hand scale is the strain.
Yeah, this is the strain, and then is this one is the pressure, which is imposed. And then once again, you see that if you impose strain, things are completely different. Now you impose the strain on the system, and then you see that indeed you even never reach the crack. The system never crack. Okay, you see that the strain goes down and the pressure goes down. Okay, because in the sense there are cracks appearing, then the system became weak, and so the pressure is gone down, and the system never breaks. So we focused on this kind of experiment that is we impose the strain.
You see this in wood
and fiberglass, the same, yeah.
But on different time scales.
Different time scale, of course. Okay. So, in any case, so what we do, we look on a different sample. These are a rather big sample, and it's important to say it's around, I never mentioned the dimension is around 20 centimeter samples, okay, round sample. So, I mean, indeed, you are really exploring a big volume of this sample. So what you do, you measure, of course, you impose a certain pressure, so you measure the pressure, and you measure the time needed to break the sample for different pressure.
So if you plot this versus log time,
yeah,
you see a straighter...
I never did, so, okay, probably, yeah, okay, yeah. And now, in a very surprising way, what you find that if you plot tau, the life time of the sample as a function of 1 over p power 4, okay, you remember the predictions that I plot I gave you before, you see that the data points are quite well aligned on a straight line. And you see that if you put other model of activation, like the Mori one of the one of Zhurkov, they completely do not fit the data. Okay, so the data are very well fitted. And then in a very interesting way, what you find that you measure the cumulative acoustic energy of the sample as a function of the reduced parameter. And in the case, here I'm talking about the imposed stress case, you find also an acoustic, the divergence of acoustic emission with the same exponent that you have been found before when you were applied ramps. So this in some way is interesting because it's telling you that in some way The real control parameter of this critical phenomenon, if a critical phenomenon is time in some way. So it's really the lifetime which controls of the system. That's the reason why also before I plotted everything in, although it was a ramp, tau minus t over tau, that in the case of the ramp, I mean, doesn't change anything. And then also we can measure also in this case the statistics, this is P of delta T. Okay, this is the statistics of time between events, acoustic events is still power law distributed, and the same for the energy. So now what we did is, for example, to check our idea if this can also hold if the pressure is time dependent. And so we applied now ramps. Ramps, and then we use this integral form to predict the time. And then you see that what is amazing, that this is the prediction of the equations. These are the experimental points. Forget the triangle for the moment. This is ambient temperature, and this is for wood, and this is for fiberglass. Okay. So you have, as you mentioned, you have different time scales, of course, but the fit remains quite good. Now the problem are coming in. The problem, if you believe that this is activations, you want to change temperature, and you would expect that everything change. And what you find that actually this is not the case, because we increase the temperature in a range where the properties of the material didn't change too much, but you have to keep in mind that you have an exponential dependence on temperature, so even just changing the temperature of 80 Kelvin will give you a strong variations of the lifetime, and this has not occurred. So this means that indeed, although I mean you have a functional behavior that seems the one predicted by Pomo, the temperature in the system does not seem to be so sensitive to temperature as could be expected, actually.
But I could imagine that in the limit where you had just an extremely sharp turn on, right?
Yeah.
You would just get the breaking time going like 1 over this A sub P.
What do you mean? I don't.
Suppose we just say at some pressure it breaks.
Yeah.
Then if you made this same plot, you would see the breaking time drop as 1 over AP, because the time to reach that breaking point...
Oh, yeah, okay, if you a very big picture.
How different is that power law that you've got there from just 1 over P?
1 over P? No, I mean, it's quite different.
Excuse me, 1 over AP.
1 over AP.
Applying the time to break over the ramp time.
Yes.
And if we say that nothing happens pretty much until we get out to this rate.
Yeah.
Then we would get something looking very much like that curve. So I'm just wondering how much of a test.
Well, we can plot the data. I mean, we can take the data again.
This is very clear. But the other thing when you impose the ramp.
Yeah.
Because this is such a strong function of pressure, it's not clear that anything matters except
No, of course, the last part. I mean, I completely agree. Okay.
And so the question is, if you just were to look, instead of plotting it in this way, at breaking time times A sub P.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
The breaking pressure.
Yeah.
How much does it actually vary?
I have to check. Okay, I have to check. But I just decided to give you an historical description. I don't believe too much to this to this expression. Okay. It's very similar, because indeed you have to explain such a, for example, in this case, such a very. Very fast behavior, because this is actually exponential 1 over P4, This is really, the range is very small, and the increase, you see the number, order of magnitude that on the other side is very large, okay? So I don't think this is the good expressions, and this is actually is an open problem with Loic, we are discussing a lot, but this is really the real point that remains open on all this data, okay?
So,
yeah. Yeah, sure.
Also, as my response to the question, because in fact, it was studied first time, according to my knowledge, in Zhukov team.
Yeah.
There were thousands of experiments.
Yeah.
Because the total time includes two parts. The first is just activation part.
Yeah.
And the second is characteristic time of crack propagation, leading crack. And
yeah, but this is very fast.
Not any further.
I don't know, but this is not in the Zhukov paper anyway. I have to say that there are a lot of things that I don't understand. I mean, we can discuss this point, but there are a lot of things that are not really clear on the Zhukov paper. Indeed, you see that for this data, for example, the Zhukov fig doesn't work at all. And okay, for example, there are also problems, for example, in homogeneous materials, where this kind of activation. There are a lot of things in the Zhukov paper. Although, I mean, the idea is very nice. He did an incredible amount of measurements, but still there are. Still there are problems. I think there are a lot of problems about that. Okay, so let me list the problems, and then I'll go to the. If I have what time? I have roughly 1 hour. Okay, so yes, probably I have time. So I'll give you the problems, and then I'll explain the model that we try to propose. And some part of that has been already explained by Loic, but I want to discuss with you of this. Okay, so what we have seen, that temperature is not a big influence on tau. Okay, this is clearly a problem, if you want. Indeed, for a temperature evolution of 80 Kelvin, the expected variation of tau is about 50%. At a smaller pressure, 100%, at a smaller pressure, about 100% of the largest pressure. In our case, delta tau over tau is just smaller than 10%, okay, for delta T 80 Kelvin. So it means that you have a sort of an effective temperature about 3,000 Kelvin, to explain
this
that.
Delta tau over tau in a ramped case.
Yeah, in the ramped case or whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, even if you take the stationary case, I mean, it will be the same. I mean, in the range that we have done, I mean, it's the same, okay? So the point is, what is the origin of such a high temperature? So then there is another point, that if you make the reason that you work as the hypothesis done by Golubovich and Pomo, it's clear that in activation process the time statistic is Poissonian, whereas in our experiment it is Gaussian. And the other point is that in many creep tests done in many materials, for example, when you use a small sample, lifetime of samples submitted to a tensile stress has fluctuation about 100%. That means that you are more close to a Poissonian case. So in our case, the predictability was around 10%. Okay? And then the other question, so where this big difference come from? So the first, in order to answer to this question, the first idea that we had is, for example, to think that acoustic noise or the environmental noise could play the roles of a disturbing effect that can produce the sort of temperature of the system, okay? And it really doesn't work because we put a large source of noise, I mean, like vibrations and so on, close to the sample, but nothing changed. And in this case, indeed, I mean, you can see that the difference is clear by the fact that in the sample, in our sample, as I've shown you at the very beginning, the final cracks is produced by the coalescence of many cracks, and actually this can explain to you the fact that you can change from a Poissonian statistic to a Gaussian one. So, we jump into the problem that indeed the sample disorder may play an important role on all these descriptions. And indeed, the original, as I said, the original POMO description was based on a single crack, and in a real sample, the final crack is the sum of our many micro cracks, and indeed, this preprocess may produce Gaussian statistics. And indeed, this fact can also explain why, in small sample, the time is not reproducible. Indeed. Just to make a long story short, we did the experiment in small sample. What I've shown to you, indeed, was done in the large sample. But then, using the same material, but just reducing the size, you see that the distribution of lifetime begins to be like a sort of Poissonian distribution of time, which is coherent by the fact that the crack process is dominated by the largest defect. And once this defect breaks, then you have a propagation of the crack. But still, the mean time goes like 1 over p to the 4. Okay? So let me give you the results, the experimental data. So the experimental data show that sample lifetime follows a well-defined function of pressure. When the system is driven at constant pressure, the Cretan divergence is found as a function of the reduced time. Event size and time delay between events are power law distributed. And the lifetime statistic depend on the system size also. The lifetime does not depend on temperature. So the point is if a simple activation model can take into account of these observations. So I'll go now to the how we try to model this kind of behavior. And we want really to study the role of disorder on this kind of process. And people who played the game about this kind of idea used what is called the fiber bundle model, where you have a sort of a set of parallel springs in parallel, which are driven all together by a constant force. And this can be mimicked with, for example, the fuse network, where the springs are replaced by spring by fused. But then what people has not done, I mean, there are many different kind of this model. And what they have not done is, for example, to suppose that you have a thermal noise in such in each of its components. And you want to study the role of thermal noise on this network. In some way, you can rephrase also the system, for example, for electrical circuits, in the sense that you have, for example, a set of resistance in parallel, and then you ask if this network of resistance can be broken by its own thermal noise. So the model is quite simple. Each fiber is submitted to a local force, which is just democratically redistributed over the fiber. Small n is the number of broken fibers. Then, if the strength, if the local force is larger than a certain threshold, the fiber will be broken. And P of Fc is characterized by the variance Td, okay, that I'll call the temperature of the disorder. And, of course, each fiber is submitted to an additive random noise. This is the difference of what has been done before, which follows a zero mean normal distribution of variance T. Okay, so on each fiber, you can write that you have the external force, which is applied from plus a noise. So the advantages of this model is quite simple, can be solved approximately, can be integrated numerically, but they give you the approximated solutions of this model. And what you realize, there is a very interesting things that appear. That is that this is the solutions, that is the time can be written as a function of the damage. This is the damage density. Times a constant that So this is the evolution of the damage as a function. The damage is, of course, the number of broken bones with respect to the total number of bones. And then what you find that you can also compute the lifetime of this network. And you find that, indeed, there is the appearance of an effective temperature, which is the, or otherwise, if you don't like the idea of effective temperature, a renormalized energy barrier. And so this effective temperature is a function of the applied stress and the variance of the disorder of the fiber. And what you find that indeed the damage rate has also a divergence close to the critical point.
What is F0 called?
What?
What's F0?
Is just the force for each spring. That is the total force divided by the all of the bones that are not broken.
So
okay.
Minus alpha
and alpha. Well, yeah, is this one? Okay. Sorry. Yeah. F0 is just is defined in some place here. Okay. No, this is wrong. This F, total F divided by the living, with the unbroken bones, okay?
And is this for fixed F or ramped F?
This is for fixed force, okay? So this solution is for fixed force, okay? And now what you find, that there are interesting features of the system. This is the damage rate as a function of time, and this is the lifetime as a function of 1 over T. You see that indeed the theoretical predictions, the approximated solutions. But what I want to stress, there are two interesting features that this model produces. One is the Mori law. That is, the damage rate goes down one as 1 over T, okay, close to the crack point. And then you have the divergence of the damage rate close to the fracture rate. So that is interesting because you have these two properties that are coming out alone on this model. So I think I give you some conclusions about this, the model. The thermal activity of 511 model presents interesting features. The disorder strongly reduced the sample lifetime, but increase the lifetime predictability, okay? Because actually we can... this property could explain our experimental result of lifetime in some way. The Mori law and the divergence of the damage rate are natural consequence of this simple model. Now, there are problems. Of course, there are problems because the dependence is, of course, is not the one predicted by Pomo. And the question is, can be due to the one-dimensional structure of this model. So that's the reason why we did an extension of in 2D of this kind of model. And one is the things that has been described by Vanel, that is the noise-induced dynamics of a single crack, that has been extensively discussed, so I will not go again on that. But then you can also study the damage growth in a disorder 2D network. And here, I mean, just to finish, I don't go into the details, but what I can say that here in this case, analytical calculation is not possible, okay? It's not possible. We did not succeed. But indeed, using the result that we have found in the 1D model, that is a sort of mean field of this system, we found that indeed the corrections for effective potential are the same that we found in one dimensions. So at the end, there are I'll skip over all that because will be just to repeat what I've already said in one single model. And so I can give you some general conclusions. That is, that activation model of crack explain many experimental results. In the case of damage growth, they justify the existence of effective temperature reduction, or if you prefer, reduction of the energy barrier induced by the sample disorder. The transition from Poissonian to Gaussian statistics of the lifetime when the sample size is increased and the critical divergence of the damage rates closed to tau. In the case of a single crack, growth in heterogeneous materials, was shown by Loic, is the dynamics of the crack tip, the statistics of the jumps. So, general conclusions, this is probably a question that has been stressed more, that activation model can be probably be used to predict the lifetime in large heterogeneous structures. Okay, to be verified. Okay, thank you very much for your attention. Yes.
In your bundle model, when the fiber breaks, right? Yeah. The fibers nearby are not more likely to break than anything.
No.
Coming back to the question, if you have micro cracks,
yeah.
I understand that the soda can take over, but still, you know, the point nearby, in some sense, to break than other points.
Absolutely, you are right. Yeah, right. But if you want, this is the fiber bundle. I mean, if you want, is just a mean field model, okay? Because everything is coupled with everybody.
Yeah.
And let me explain the result in two dimensions where this effect is completely taken into account. And you see that indeed the result in two dimensions is exactly the same. That is, you have this when the system is ordered. You have, okay, you have still some noise, because in this case we use the thermal noise. So thermal fluctuations are really important in this case. And when you have the disorder, actually you have just the corrections of the potential that can be written in this way, exactly in the way that for the mean field case. Okay? The only difference is you have such an alpha that is constant in the case of the 1D case, but is a function of the driving in this case. Yeah.
I guess I missed something. You pointed out that there was this problem with the temperature dependence.
Yeah.
I don't see the resolution here. Maybe I missed it.
Okay, it's not yet solved in a strict way. But what you see that what is interesting here, let me here because probably it's more explicit. Okay, here I put the effective temperature. I prefer to do that. I mean, in some way, because you see that immediately that this effective temperature, because of the disorder, can become very high. Yes, but then you show that as the temperature becomes very high, the dependence on T become the system becomes much less sensitive. And this, the more the sample is disordered, and the more you are sensitive to the variation of T. I can show you data. I mean that is quite
more insensitive. Or
more insensitive. Yeah. More insensitive. Okay. This can explain. I mean the fact that, for example, in some sample you see that, and in other sample you don't see. Okay. So, but still, and then okay. This I go to the also to your point. That you see that the dependence indeed is not completely at all the one predicted by Pomo. But indeed we try, for example, to fit the data with this dependence. It doesn't work. But still these are two-dimensional calculations, probably in 3D as one has to keep into account different symmetries and probably this exponent would be not the same. But what is interesting that the lifetime in disordered materials is not fitted by that in the three-dimensional sample. Instead, it works quite well in what has been shown by Vanella, where you have two-dimensional samples, and indeed all the data can be fit in this way. Yeah.
In the results that you showed with the tomography,
yeah.
It didn't really look like your typical percolation problem. More looked like the largest defects.
Yeah, but then they joined in order to.
Yeah, but you didn't have a huge statistic. You had three or four.
Yeah, yeah, but in the case, I mean, the sample is very small actually. Those samples were not the big one. That were just as small, and because you have a lot of problems related to the fact that tomography. I mean, we are not a large view on that.
Just
okay.
Just to follow up, if you look at the damage accumulation models.
Yeah.
The percolating network, the connected cluster, that would correspond to your cracks.
Yeah.
Changes from having a fractal dimension, which in two dimensions is very close to 2, 1.8 something, 1.9, to being something very small, like 1.5. So you get these very extended structures. You wouldn't see the complex structure that someone used to seeing a percolation pattern would expect.
Yeah.
It might be useful just to think of either Weibull statistics or even you actually have the statistics in this particular case.
Yeah.
And think of some, you know, there are a number of damage models that people have come up with, I guess, grading tips about using Weibull statistics and just calculating, you know, when the largest cracks would start to run.
Yeah.
I think this question, sorry, please.
I was wondering also whether decreasing stress and then putting it back, you know, so you hear a noise, you decrease stress. But
yes.
Maybe if you didn't, those, you know, there would be some kind of little initial effects and those larger cracks would actually just run somewhat further and, you know.
No, they will not. This kind of sample, I mean, you need, I have not the data on the computer, but indeed, in order to break those samples, you need a lot of acoustic emissions. So then we have done, I mean, a standard example, for example, with ramping or just with imposed of creep tests. And actually, you need a lot of acoustic emissions in order to produce the final cracks.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying it's not quite clear to me that they would occur in the same places. If you didn't stop the loading. And
yeah, okay. I agree, but I mean, it's not simple experimental because you need, as I said, 90 seconds in order to construct the image, even with the strong source. Yeah.
There was a question by Jay. Probably it's the reason that some results that were obtained in Russia in Zhukovki is not well known. And since I was involved in this kind of the study, after the thousands of experiments by Zhukovki for different materials, it was found due to the very nice experiments. It was creep.
Yeah.
It was creep for different materials combined with a small X-ray diffraction. And due to these experiments for different stage of damage accumulations, was measured change of concentration of defects and mean size of the defects. And due to this study, it was found at least two violations of Zhukov law for small stress and large stress. And for large stress, up to characteristic time, 1 microsecond. And I think, since we were involved, it was established very important role of interaction between defects, very pronounced effects of non-locality, generation of damage hotspots in different places of specimen. And if somebody wants, I could show briefly these results.
Mm-hmm. Just sketch these results.
Okay. Yeah.
Before you started talking about the model, you made some conclusions, and one of those was that lifetime was independent of temperature.
Yeah.
I sort of froze at that point, and I'm still trying to recover from that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yeah, this is a strong statement. Yeah. I mean, of course, in a range where the parameter of the material doesn't change too much, of course. Indeed, we change 80 kelvins, and of course, if you increase a lot, we're in a region where
you were talking about fiberglass
materials.
Typically, the matrix would have been something that was a polymer. Which would exhibit viscoelastic properties.
Yeah, yeah.
Therefore, even with that 80-degree temperature change, you should have significant lifetime differences as a function of that temperature.
Yeah.
Typical creep rupture tests, like the one that Zhurkov and his team did, show that as you increase the temperature over small ranges, especially if you're in the neighborhood of the glass transition for these materials, there's a very, very rapid drop-off in the lifetime at low stresses.
Well, the kind of fiberglass, I mean, we check. I mean, in this range, it didn't change too much, the properties, indeed.
But See, I would expect that if you do the test with a constant ramp, the non-linearities as a function of pressure are going to give you very little temperature dependence in the time to rupture,
because
all that matters is the time to reach the stress. So if you do a ramp test, you won't see any temperature dependence.
No, that depends on the
ramp. If you do a ramp test, you would also tend to see probably a Gaussian distribution as opposed to a Poissonian distribution for the same reason. Whereas for a constant stress test, I think you could see entirely opposite results for the same system.
No, but wait. I partially agree with you in the sense that, for example, the size of the sample is important in order to change from Poissonian to Gaussian. I've shown you, before.
But just looking at the rate dependence for any size, you showed for the small sample data, you showed constant stress results.
Constant stress.
I think you should get the temperature dependence and the Poissonian distribution. But if you do a ramp, I think you're dominated by the time to get up to the
to the critical stress.
Critical stress, and that critical stress is itself is much more weakly temperature dependent typically than the time.
Yeah.
And so by doing a ramp test, you sort of hide a lot of the temperature dependence.
But you're basically saying go to a much much lower range of the ramp then.
Yeah.
The ramp is just too fast compared to the temperature he's looking at. But if you would do the same thing, like slow
way, slow. But if you have something that rises like an exponential P over P naught to the fourth,
you have to be very, very slow.
You would have to be exponentially slow, right. And so I don't think it's a realistic.
So it's pretty much keep it constant in some sense, at some point, or reasonable daytimes.
Right.
Sure.
Power spectra of the noise at all?
What noise? Of acoustic noise?
Yes.
Yeah.
Not really in the sense. But the power spectra of the single events.
The whole train.
The whole train. Not really. Not really. That has not been done.
And also, what was the ramp for that picture?
Yeah.
The ramp, how did that picture depend on, I guess the statistics you were showing, how did that depend on the rate you were?
Just a little, but not too much. It's the exponent, for example, if you do the statistics, does not depend too much. Indeed, you see even from creep test, from the ramp test, there are not much difference. So I have data on that. I can show to you. I have not here, but indeed, yeah.
So was the ramp rate you use here in the same range as when you were showing us later the lifetime dependence on the ramp rate? Was that sort of the same?
Yeah, was in the same range, roughly. Okay, should be here. Okay, it is. Yes, it's in this range, between 10 minus 3 and 10 minus 5. Yeah.
And were you able in your experiments to change this order in some way and look at the effect? Would there be a possibility to change the disorders in some way?
Oh, okay. Good question. That's what we are trying to do. Thank you. Indeed. The idea of of testing this fact, the temperature in some way can be related to the disorder of the system. Indeed, the idea of using solid foams was in some way dictated by that. Indeed, the solid foams can be, if you work with engineers, of material engineers, they are really able to tune the foams as you want. In the sense, you can start from something that is completely solid material, till a point where you can really add the amount of vacuum that you have inside, both changing the size and the distributions. Okay, so this is really the good material to test in real cases this idea of an effective temperature induced by the disorder. And then that's indeed, I mean, we began to do that, but is in progress. I mean, I can answer.
I mean, I'm just curious, have you looked at size distributions for these different disorders of your energy pulses? I mean, forget about the temperature right now. But,
yeah.
You know, and have you seen any change as you look at samples of different disorders, say, in where you cut up and you distribute? I mean, basically.
Not too much. The main influence is if you go to plastic situations to fragile system. And by, for example, this has been done by Stephanie Deschanel. There are a lot of data, but I have not prepared, I mean, to answer to that. But still, when you tune temperature and you do acoustics emission, you have a lot of difference if you go to with the same materials, with the same density of vacuum inside these kind of foams, going from a very plastic region, a high temperature, to the case in which you are very fragile at a low temperature. And so then you see a strong difference of behavior. Yeah. I've this data. I mean, if you're interested, we can discuss with Loic too. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I have a question concerning your feeling of the physical nature of the influence of characteristic size of specimen on kinetic of failure. Because probably two possible reasons. The first is the statistics of defect nuclear distribution.
Yeah.
And the second reason is non-locality or long-range interaction effects.
Yeah, of course. This is very important. Absolutely. Absolutely. But long range interaction is important. I mean, I think it's extremely important.
Because when we processed the numerous experimental data by the COPE, we found that from the long range interaction due to the electric field, it's most important.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, I am convinced about that. Yeah, sure, I agree. Jay, yeah?
The acoustic emission data, I'm sure you know that it's very difficult to use the amplitude data quantity.
Yeah, yeah.
So did you kind of compensate for the distance of each source?
Well, it depends on the material. Of course, this has to be done. Indeed, as we average, you're right, but in any case, as we have already four microphones in this, corrections is important, but not extremely important. It doesn't change too much, because you have always one of the four that is close to the emissions. Then, of course, it can be corrected anyway.
There's a lot of filtering effects in this whole thing. It moves through a solid body which has microstructure in it, so it filters out some components. Your transducer has only a limited bandwidth.
No, these are large band.
Well, it's still limited compared to what the source can output.
You
pick up somewhere, so the energy that you get there, you cannot translate it to the energy that was released in the cracking event. You can say it's some measure of.
It's just my. Absolutely. I mean, I didn't try. I mean, I always say that it's proportional too, but probably.
Function of, not proportional to.
It depends. I mean, you have to go to.
Yes.
Well, it depends. I mean, we can discuss about that, but at this level. I agree.
Until now, they cannot estimate the seismic energy very accurately. You know, up to the orders of magnitude because of these issues. I mean, on a larger scale, right? You lose high frequencies. You don't know how much energy was in high frequencies to start with.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a very complicated question. So. I imagine on a much smaller scale and experiment.
Same set of issues.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Distributions are perfectly fine.
The time distribution is perfectly fine. No, the amplitude is for sure. I mean, there are doubts. But still, I mean, on this distance, I mean, I completely agree, I mean, with you about the fact, of course, it's a fact, I mean, about seismic waves. But, I mean, in the case of this sample, we check, for example, the transmission of the sample with putting sources on that, and so... I never, very careful, and we never saw such a big nonlinear effects that you are mentioning. I mean, we put piezo. I mean,
so you put a source in.
Yeah, we measure, of course. Yeah. For example, the other things that we measure is the speed of sound depending on the damage rate. Okay, because in principle you can think that the speed of sound changes, but with the accuracy of our data, we didn't see any change. We did both actually, either putting an external source and just using the crack localizations, because we have a force, so the problem is overdetermined, and so you can leave the speed, of course, free. And then you see that.
That's not a problem. I think that's.
Yeah, but if you have no linear effects, if you have no linear